Skip the waiting room. TireRack.com now offers convenient mobile tire installation in select areas. Simply shop TireRack.com for your next set of tires, and at checkout, choose Tire Rack Mobile Tire Installation. An expertly trained technician will arrive with your tires and install them on site, at home, at the office, wherever you are. You'll spend less time waiting and more time doing the things you enjoy. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on. And if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome back to Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at D1Baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host, Mark Etheridge. We are here to recap Week 12 around the SEC, and who boy, was it ever a week. We got storylines all over the place. A fun week of SEC baseball, I guess, depending on who you, you know, for those of you listening, depending on who you root for, it might not have been a fun weekend, but we'll get into all of it here in a second. But first, I have to let you know that this episode of Highway to Hoover and every episode of Highway to Hoover is brought to you by PitchLogic, the system used by players, coaches, scouts, and instructors at all levels of play, from youth leagues to the big leagues. The easy-to-use and affordable technology makes the platform accessible to every player at every level. All the metrics and features used at the highest level. See PitchLogic.com for more information. Mark, you and I were both, you know, I was at some non-SEC games on Friday, but then Saturday and Sunday we weren't out on the road, if you will. And for a weekend like this, it's kind of nice because I felt like I, you know, was able to be a little bit more nimble in terms of what I was paying attention to, especially today. So, you know, as much as you and I like to be out at games, and I think that that goes for both of us, you know, all things equal, we prefer to be at games, but, you know, understanding that there are going to be weekends where that's not the case, it is nice to get one like this weekend where it seemed like you kind of had to keep your head on a swivel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my daughter graduated Saturday, so I was kind of, I mean, I missed everything Saturday, but I kind of caught up. And then today was kind of, you know, it was a lot of important games. I mean, you had LSU, you had Georgia, you had Mississippi State, Alabama, you had South Carolina, Missouri, Arkansas, Kentucky. How could I forget that one? I mean, a lot of good, you know, a lot of important games to the big picture. And we got so much to talk about, dude. I mean, let's just dive into it. Where do you want to start?
Well, I was going to pose to you the question, because I think two of the bigger stories from this weekend are LSU and Ole Miss fighting back, you know, and getting some wins they needed. It's the meme of that, of the wrestler, the Undertaker, sitting up out of the coffin, basically. And I think I could confidently say, so LSU takes 2 of 3 against A&M. They got kind of blown out today, but whatever, they won 2 of 3. That's really all they could have ever hoped for in that scenario. Yeah, I feel
absolutely.
Like as we're recording, right? Exactly. As we're recording this, Auburn and Ole Miss are still playing. So if something wild in that game happens and you wonder why we're not addressing it, it's because it hasn't happened yet. But so I'm just going to throw a prediction out there, Mark, and we'll see if it comes true. I thought it was crazy that they let Frank Thomas have eligibility again, and then they brought him in to pinch hit.
That was really cool. That was nuts.
Yeah. So other than that,
if anything,
yeah, for sure. They got Tim Hudson warming up in the bullpen, but he's got some years on him. So like, it's a long warm up time. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
He can't just,
and he can also pinch hit, which is, an added value.
True. Can the guy can swing it. But other than that, like, if something crazy happens in that finale and we're not addressing it, that's why. But already, without today's game, Ole Miss has won that series. I feel pretty confident in saying we saw a different side of LSU this weekend. Now, A&M was a little sloppy. A&M's got a couple of injuries. But I do think there are reasons to look at the result and feel optimistic that this actually is a corner turned. Now, it might not be. We'll find out. But it feels like that. I'm curious, though, for your take on, do you also feel that way about Ole Miss, or does Ole Miss feel more, compared to LSU, does Ole Miss feel more like a function of just playing an Auburn team that's been fighting it all year?
Yeah. Well, let's start with LSU, because I do think that, you know, it was a very narrow path for them to get back into the regional picture. And it started with the number one team in the nation. And all they did is go out and win 2 out of 3 from the best team in the country. You can't ask for more than that. You know, you look around the country at bubble teams and who they're facing. They're playing other bubble teams, or they're playing teams that they should pound. And LSU got number one team in the nation here. Have fun. Right. And it's kind of interesting, because last week when I was in Baton Rouge, Jay Johnson made the comment, and it was much maligned on social media, that LSU would win, and I kind of changed it to contend, in any other conference around the country. And that's, maybe it's hyperbole, but LSU is a pretty good team. And I think they kind of backed up what Jay was talking about this weekend. If they pitch, they can play with anybody. They just don't always pitch. And so it's going to be really interesting down the stretch. Can they do enough? Because they've dug themselves into a tremendous hole. Can they go to Alabama, and then they host Ole Miss, who's likely going to be in a similar position to them at that point, just to try to get into position to be selected? And you always wonder, right? I look at what traditionally has been the baseline to get to, and it's 13 wins for a team when LSU's RPI area, I think they were at 30 heading into today. I don't know what they are after today's loss, but it's probably, I can refresh here. But I do think that they're going to be in a position. They're 35 at the moment. So, yeah, they are within striking distance to getting there. So what if they get 12 wins? If they get 12 wins and they go into Hoover and in a few games, is that enough based on, great wins, very talented roster, all of these kind of intangible things? What's actually, and the part that I always wonder about is, what's the committee going to think? You hear all of this chatter about SEC being as good as it's ever been. Does that matter? are you just looking at, wins and losses and resume points and RPIs and all of that? Or do you think, well, this is a team that lost to all these great teams, and that's why their record is that way? And they beat a few of them. Maybe they didn't win enough, but they're trending upward at the right time of the year. Do I want to play them in a regional if I'm a host team and I see LSU rolling in there? I'm probably not very excited about it. How much does that matter? Or does it matter at all? Right. And I think that's going to be a just fascinating storyline we head down the last few weeks, because here's the defending national champions. They raided the portal, got all these great players. They have a lot of, freshman talent coming back that's improving as the year goes on. How does that factor into their, to their status, as we head into it? And then you have Ole Miss. 2 years ago, they won the whole thing. Last year, they were not good. This year, they are much improved, but how much improved? And that's what we're going to see these final few weekends. They haven't pitched real well. They haven't hit real well. But they are within striking distance. They're going to have a chance to put their way in, just like LSU did, right? They've got Texas A&M coming into Oxford next weekend. I don't know after A&M loses to LSU how I like your chances to do that do that twice in a row. I kind of think that was a one-shot pony. And now Ole Miss is, you know, now they're going to get a ticked off A&M team. But then, you know, Ole Miss goes to LSU. So, hey, do you get swept with A&M and maybe you got a shot, right, to get go do some things in Baton Rouge and then play your way in. So I think they're both alive, and that's really all you could ask for from this weekend. You just stay afloat, right? Don't get knocked out. Bob and weave and move forward and try to get to where you can do some damage later.
Yeah, I think for me, it's, I guess, to answer my own question instead of just posing a question to you and then letting, you know, letting you put your neck out there.
Like, I'll answer too. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, more so, you know, that annoying podcast host thing where you ask a question and then you yourself don't end up having to answer it because you're the one that posed the question. But so I'm confident that we've seen something different from LSU in that, you know, they're now at a point where the gauge jump, Luke Holman 1-2, you feel confident in.
Yeah.
Being good enough to win more often than not. Obviously, Griffin Herring has been excellent the whole way.
And Christian Little
had, had maybe his best outing as a member of the, you know, the LSU program on Saturday. Offensively, Jared Jones has gotten hot again. He's up to 20 home runs. He and Tommy White, who's also swinging it better. Those guys have gotten hotter. You've gotten contributions from a few guys that have just played better of late. Ashton Larson comes to mind, of course. Yeah. So it does feel a little bit like a corner turn for me. Whereas with Ole Miss, I don't necessarily see anything different there where, you know, they've had to fight pretty hard this weekend against Auburn. You know, it's a one run win on Saturday, kind of an ugly 11-7 win on Friday. Now that's not to say they can't get to the postseason, right? I mean, they're playing now tied 5-5 as we record. Like, if they win that game and sweep, they're actually in pretty decent shape, you know, to get it done. But once we get, let's assume both LSU and Ole Miss get to the postseason, I'm going to be a lot more scared of LSU if I'm a host team than I am of Ole Miss. So me saying that I think LSU's turnaround is a little more real, a little more tangible, is not to say that Ole Miss isn't going to make the cut. They very well might, but man, that's, you're talking about a night. Like, if LSU gets into position to be a postseason team, if you're another hosting team in the Southeast, an ACC host, a Big 12 host, you are kind of rooting for LSU to win the SEC tournament so that maybe they can actually host also, to just kind of avoid avoiding a Tennessee situation where Tennessee gets sent to Clemson last year and ends up winning that regional. Right. So,
I'm with you completely. And I do think that, you know, in the pecking order right now, it's LSU and then Ole Miss. But Ole Miss has a chance, right? In these last 2 weeks, they host to A&M, they go to LSU. They could flip that, absolutely, and move ahead of LSU and take that, you know, if there is a, you know, the 11th spot, which maybe it's a 10th spot, depending on what Florida does, and we'll get to that in a minute. But they could be the team. And I do think that only one of those, there's only room for one. And right now, if anybody gets it, it's LSU. And I'm not sure LSU's got it yet. But it's, you know, that's kind of where we are, you know, with 2 weeks left.
Yeah, it's somebody is going to, there's this group of Florida, Alabama, Ole Miss, LSU, and like, don't look now, we'll talk about them later, but maybe Vanderbilt, that are kind of in this, and like, not all of those are going to make the cut, you know, like, even if the committee says, hey, this is a historically good year in the SEC. And like, I don't know if I believe that, like, it's a very good year, don't get me wrong, but I don't know that it's better than last year, for example. Right. So maybe the committee breaks precedent, but even if they do, like, all of those teams are not getting in. So like, there is, yeah, you're right. There is kind of like this group of teams that are going to be like, it's going to be a knife fight the last 2 weeks and in Hoover, which is good for us. Makes Hoover a lot of fun, but not everyone is ultimately going to end up getting there. One team we do know for certain is getting there and probably a lot further is Tennessee, the assumed number one team in the country. The new rankings have not been done yet, so I can't say with 100% certainty, but it looks logical that Tennessee will be the number one team in the country tomorrow morning. They win a series on the road against Florida, a series that Florida probably kicks itself a little bit. That Friday game was pretty close. They had opportunities in that game, and then they get to a Sunday game, and that one was not close, as it turned out.
These Cags left, it was over.
An 11 run inning for Tennessee, and that one really allowed them to boat race the Gators late. So feel free to take the Tennessee end of this, Mark, or talk about Florida, which again finds itself in a sticky situation where now they're just one game over 500, and we've talked about the path, like their path the rest of the way is not easy. Like, they really are up against the ropes, and they had advantages that Ole Miss and LSU didn't have in terms of, like, they were starting. It wasn't but a few weeks ago they were above 500 in the SEC. Like, they, you know, we were starting to say things like, you know what, I think this team is starting to figure it out. And like, here they are, you know, having lost however many conference series in a row or whatever it is. They're in a real pickle. So feel free to take either end of that series.
Yeah, I'll start with Florida. I mean, the 24 and 23, they have seven games left. They have South Florida in midweek. They have Kentucky. We just saw knock off Arkansas, who, you know, they have the best record in the conference. So that's who you have next. Wonderful, right? And then you go to Georgia, who just put Vanderbilt, who's playing as good as anybody in the country right now. I mean, they're just really hot. So good luck, Florida. The only thing I would call out here is there is a chance that Florida is able to schedule another game. Remember, they had the rainouts with St. John's early in the year. They lost the first game and the other two wiped out. If they can find someone, it's perfectly within their rights to bring someone in. There's a couple things there. One, you kind of need to play somebody you can beat, because otherwise what's the point? And two, they've got to agree to do it. we want to come get thumped in Gainesville while you help your record. That's not an easy sell. Maybe I didn't sell that right. Maybe you could sell it better, but you need to work on that to get somebody to come in and help you get that extra win. Maybe enough money with that, depending on who you ask, but that's kind of what Florida is at this point, right?
That's it. I mean, they've got a midweek against South Florida, and South Florida isn't great, but they're good enough to beat Florida if the things go a certain way.
Yeah.
I would be looking at, hey, FAMU, here's a giant check.
Right.
Do you want to come here? Let's play two, as a matter of fact.
Right. They have two openings. They certainly do.
Yeah. And that's no disrespect to FAMU, but obviously it's just a different level of competition there. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, with Florida, they also caught a tough break. The Thursday game was rained out. So Pierce Coppola, who was going to be the game one starter, you know, was rained out. He'd already got hot. And then when he came back to warm up the next day, he wasn't right. So he didn't pitch at all this weekend. So you lose one of your best bullets, and he doesn't, he doesn't help you at all. So, you know, hopefully next weekend with Kentucky, everybody's healthy and you get an even matchup throughout. Because if you think about it, you got to play a doubleheader against Tennessee, who's now the number one team in the country. Incredible offensive club. You don't have your Friday starter. And you got to play a doubleheader, and it starts early in the day when there are no fans there at home who can help you kind of pull through, you know, the tough moment. That was a tough deal. And they were able to get the split in the doubleheader, which frankly, I was wondering, right, when the doubleheader was scheduled, would they get thumped in both games and then have to win with Cags in game three? And it's a good thing they didn't, because, you know, that didn't, game three didn't work out so great for them. So I do think that, you know, Florida is, I still have faith in the talent. They're going to find a way to split these last six SEC games. Hopefully for their, they can win the USF game, and then they're good heading into Hoover. Otherwise, they're going to have to go on a run in Hoover, and that is not, you know, for the meek. As far as Tennessee, I mean, just they continue to just hit the ball all over the park. I mean, that is the best offense. I think it's the best offense in college baseball. Some people will say A&M. I think it's Tennessee.
I'm with you. Yep.
And if they pitch, which they pitch pretty well this weekend, it's not a team I want to face. They've got an excellent shot to go a long way. Certainly an Omaha team. And once they get to Omaha, if they pitch enough and they continue to hit, they do. I mean, the ceiling for them is the national title. And that's if I'm a Vol fan, I got to be feeling myself right now, because this is what you want. You want this opportunity. You know, you had it a couple of years ago. Then last year you were 2-seed, and you know, a lot of people were wondering, you know, what was this team about? Because it was inconsistent. It got hot at the end of the year and made it to Omaha, made the Final Four, and in the College World Series. And I think this is a year. A lot of those players are back. A lot of them have tasted Omaha. They know what to expect when they get there. That would be a team, assuming they make it back there, is going to be a handful, right? And one of the favorites to win the whole damn thing.
I like what Tennessee's doing with the way they've had to work around some holes in their pitching staff. They're doing a nice job of just using what they have. They're piggybacking basically 2 days on the weekend. Now, one of them is a scheduled piggyback with, you know, Stamos and Causey. That's worked really well in generally speaking. They also have a pseudo piggyback where sometimes Xander Sechrist gives them, you know, 5-6 innings, but sometimes he gives you two, like it was last weekend. And, you know, Nate Snead is there to kind of be the second piece of that piggyback. I like that because it shows a willingness to, I think I've said this before, a willingness to do it differently than you've had to do it before. Obviously, Tennessee's been very fortunate to have the starting pitching that they've had the last couple of years, and this year they just don't on that same level. And so they're tinkering and figured it out, and you know, we'll see if it works when they get into the business end of a postseason run. But for right now, it's really, really effective, and I think, you know, deserve a lot of credit for, you know, tinkering with it until they found something that feels tenable.
Yeah, and you assume AJ Russell is looming out there at some point, and he comes back and you're that much better, right? Because maybe he just gives you bullpen innings, but I mean, that's that's some really good bullpen innings if you get them. So
yeah,
it's just, yeah, right now that's a bonus.
Yeah, no doubt. Joining Tennessee likely as a top 8 seed in the NCAA tournament, Kentucky. That would be, if that happens, and they're at 18 SEC wins now. So, I mean, yeah, they might already be there, but like, they would have to get swept the next 2 weekends to even create some sort of doubt about that, I would say. So I don't want to lose the achievement of that when you consider this is a program that had never been to the NCAA tournament in back-to-back years until this year. And now they're hosting in back-to-back years, and they're going to almost certainly be a top 8 for the first time in program history. So getting this series win against Arkansas was a big, big deal for that program. So I want to make sure we celebrate that appropriately, because that is a big deal. Other, you know, SEC fan bases for teams who have been there and done that time and time again might roll their eyes a little bit at that, but like, the reality is that program just doesn't have the history, and they're creating some history now. So that's always, I always want to celebrate that. That's cool stuff. I thought the biggest thing for the Wildcats over the weekend was the start for Dom Nyman on Saturday, because he'd gotten 3 total outs and he wasn't perfect Saturday, but he got him into the 6th inning, gave up 2 runs, gave the offense a chance to kind of run away with things. If that start goes sideways like the previous two, A, you probably have to do something different in the rotation next weekend. Mm-hmm. And B, good luck coming out with some energy on Sunday if you lose that Saturday game the way you've lost the previous couple. So I just thought that was huge. To me, that was the turning point in the whole weekend, was Nyman coming out and throwing the ball well.
Yeah, that's a great call out. I think the other thing that struck me is just watching it today is how good the atmosphere was. I mean, they had a lot of fans there. They had, it was obvious that that impacted, and to me, it impacted the game. I had not really considered Kentucky as one of those atmospheres that impact the game. You know, you think about LSU or Mississippi State or Ole Miss or other Arkansas, others throughout the league. But Kentucky was, I mean, those fans were into it, dude. They were ready to go. And I do think it mattered. And because of that, you know, they were able to kind of keep a rally going, or to get the big out when they needed it on defense. And, you know, that's a home field advantage. And we, you know, to go back to what you mentioned, they're going to host. And if they win that, they're going to host the Super. And now you've got a home field advantage and fans that really are into it. I mean, that was what I was thinking. I was thinking, this is the year Kentucky makes it to Omaha. I mean, I'm, you know, we all kind of wondered what staying power they would have as the season went on. And you believe a little more week after week, right? And then you finally get, you know, you had the last week or last couple of weeks where you kind of dipped a little bit and you're wondering, okay, well, they're playing better teams, good offenses. What are they going to do? But boy, they look good this weekend, and they beat a really good team that can pitch it. And you know, they, and other than Hagan Smith, who no one hits, and let's take that out of the equation, they handled a really good Arkansas staff pretty well. And if they can handle the non-Hagan Smith part of everyone's pitching staff, that's everyone else in the country. Okay. So that sets you up pretty well to have success, you know, unless you play them, you know, play Arkansas in that one game he pitches. So if I'm Kentucky, I'm feeling awesome right now. Right. I mean, you got to go to Florida, and Florida needs wins, and that's not going to be an easy series. And you got Vanderbilt, and who knows what you got there, because Vandy, you know, the Vandy's struggling right now. They go home to play Tennessee, and maybe they get right, maybe they don't, but then they got to come play you. And Kentucky's probably got the SEC championship, regular season championship, on the line. I would have to think there's another awesome venue, another awesome crowd support situation. And I kind of like Kentucky's chances in that, man. I mean, what has Nick done with this team, man? I mean, with this program, considering where they were a few years ago, you know, he was kind of playing, you know, coaching for his job, and now he's coaching for the job of a team that's going to be an Omaha team. I really believe that at this point. Assuming they play at home, and I have to believe they do, who's going to beat them at home? That's what I want to see, because that right now, Kentucky is a team. I would not pick anyone against them at home right now, maybe other than Tennessee, and that's not going to – or A&M. It's not going to happen, because those teams are going to be playing at home too.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought, is that the teams that I would have any sort of conviction in beating Kentucky in Lexington are going to be on their side of the bracket, metaphorically speaking, right? Because mm-hmm. The top eights, like Tennessee's going to likely be a top eight. A&M's a top eight. Right. And then you look at the other conferences, and it's, I don't know, like could Florida State beat them at home? Maybe, but they're, again, that's likely a top eight. So,
Are they better than Arkansas? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm with you. Like, I wrote that on the Friday victory over Tennessee, that like this is an Omaha quality team. Now, not all Omaha quality teams get there, but this is an Omaha level team. And I think it's taken a lot of people a long time to come around to that idea, because, you know, even this year where their lineup looks more like a physical SEC lineup, like their pitching staff doesn't have the stuff of most others, and they do it a little bit differently. And you know, they don't have those like workhorses on the mound, but they're sitting here at 18-6 in the league, and they, you know, could win the uh-huh. SEC title. And, you know, if they get to 21 wins, I think that's the most they've ever had, as almost certainly. I mean, 2006, they won 20, when they shared the SEC title with Alabama. So, What a time that was. Kentucky and Alabama splitting the SEC title in 2006. Shout out to John Cohen days. And Mitch Gaspard. But yeah, so yeah, I just, again, like, want everyone to take a minute to appreciate like the magnitude of what's happening here. And when you look at the support they're getting, the facility they play in, you know, they've obviously put in some work to get to this point from a structural standpoint, both literally and metaphorically. Mm-hmm. You start to think though that, hey, these limitations we felt about Kentucky, like, okay, you can't control the weather, but outside of that, you know, it does feel like maybe they're just kind of systematically removing some of the limitations that they have traditionally had on them.
Yeah.
That obviously we'll see in 2024 or 25, 26 and beyond.
Hey everyone, we're going to take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on. And if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams. Now celebrating 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams is the originator of everyone's favorite Luxe Home blanket. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as its ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are each made with premium materials. Get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code PODCAST15.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
You mentioned Vanderbilt there, Mark. Let's get to them. Mm-hmm. They get swept by Georgia. Maybe it's just as simple as this. Like, Vanderbilt will always be somewhat dangerous if they can get into the postseason. That's an if now. Vanderbilt 11-13 in the league. RPI is fine, but none of these bubble teams we're talking about is RPI going to be a problem. Like that, they're all fine. It's just a matter of getting to that magic number of SEC wins, or at least that's our perception of the situation. But suddenly, I mean, you mentioned having to go to Kentucky. Like, okay, that's tough right off the bat. So the math is already like difficult for them. But anyway, I say all that to say, if they do get into a regional, they're always going to be a little dangerous because Carter Holton and Bryce Cunningham in particular are capable of just really shoving it on any given day. Mm-hmm. We've seen both of them do it at least a handful of times this year. So that can happen. Mm-hmm. But when that doesn't happen, as was the case this weekend, I'm not really sure what you point to that gives you I'm not sure what you point to that gives you a lot of confidence that Vanderbilt can like scratch and claw their way through a regional when Holton and Cunningham don't pitch well. And I think you kind of see it similarly.
Yeah, I do. Well, I mean, it was certainly a deal where Georgia took it to them early. You know, they got to Cunningham, they got to Holton. And then today, I mean, they got to Thompson. And then how's Vanderbilt respond? In the first 2 days, they really didn't. In the final game, they responded some. I think part of that is, you know, you're facing the third pitcher instead of the first or second. And I do think that Vandy has been so good at home and has struggled on the road. I mean, it's a team that really needs to play well next week against Tennessee. And kind of like what we talked about with LSU, hey, your season's kind of hanging in the balance. Here comes the number one team in the nation. Here's your moment. Okay, well, Vandy's got their moment next week because Tennessee will likely be number one. They're going to roll into Nashville, and that's going to be a monster series for both teams because Vandy needs some momentum. They need some wins. They need to kind of secure their spot. Because a couple weeks ago, we were thinking about them as a hosting candidate, and now we're worried about them missing the tournament completely. I mean, it's definitely time to downturn. So
life comes at you fast, then, as the kids used to say.
It does, right? Windshield and the bug, right? And I do think that, you know, with Georgia, now they've got to be feeling like, hey, we're going to host. And I'm not going to argue with them at this point. I mean, they're in a great position should they continue to play well. They go to South Carolina the next weekend. That won't be easy. But if they win that, and then, you know, then they've got Florida the next weekend, they really kind of need three wins out of these last six games. And I think they host because their RPI is just amazing. It's top 10 RPI. And even if they lose the South Carolina series, if they can win the Florida series, they're in great shape to do it. And, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but the Condon Cags finale in that last weekend has kind of got me fired up. I mean, we love star power, and with what Condon's doing, I mean, dude is homered in seven straight games. Okay. Cags did it in nine earlier this year. Condon's streak still going. He's also got 32 for the year, and he's still got seven more games. So six conference games anyway. I don't remember the midweek situation, but I mean, he's, and then Hoover, and then a regional, and maybe a super regional. I mean, dude's going to hit 40 if he gets enough games. And
yeah, he's got a bare minimum nine games left.
Yeah, maybe if he doesn't get enough games, he's going to hit 40. I mean, because, you know, if he just gets enough pitches to hit, and that's the thing. We all wondered about, you know, Georgia's pitching, because the offense, you know, we saw early on they were really, then the question was, well, okay, once conference play starts, they won't hit as well. They kind of are. So now you're getting, well, they probably won't pitch like this once they get into, you know, play these good teams, and the pitching has continued to get better as the year went on. I mean, Harris today threw four hitless innings. He was their midweek starter, and he continues to kind of ramp up. He's a
guy who really couldn't get on the mound for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he was buried for a long time.
Wes, man. I mean, he's a big league pitching coach and he's coaching in college. He has an idea of what to do with these guys. And that's what we're seeing as the year goes on, more time to develop and change and get guys moving in the right direction. And Georgia right now is a team I wouldn't want to play. And it's trending in the right direction. I think at this point, I wouldn't bet against them having a regional. And then once they get there, that is not a team I want to face. Cause I mean, you have a guy you can't pitch to, you have other guys in the lineup that are backing around. So if you walk him, they're going to knock him in. And now the pitching's getting better. I mean, Georgia's in the best position it's been in quite a while, right? Since some of those great years they had when they, you know, they were top national seeds and just, you know, it didn't materialize in the postseason. This is moving in the right direction for Georgia. It's amazing hierarchy, man. I mean, it's, Wes has done an incredible job in his first year at Georgia.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they were always going to be a scary team in a regional, even when we thought like, hey, this may be a three seed earlier in the season, right? They were always going to be scary because they were always going to have Charlie Condon, and they had some other offensive pieces. So it was like, okay, that makes them not a comfortable team to see in your regional. But now, to your point, you know, Leighton Finley pitched his best game of the year this past weekend. You know, we mentioned Zach Harris pitching his best game of the weekend or of the season. Colton Smith has been dominant the last 3 weeks. Yeah. You know, Brian Zeldin has been consistent all year, you know, so he's a guy, you know, you can lean on. If Charlie Goldstein does turn out to be, largely fine. Now, he left his start a little bit early on Saturday, but Wes said it
apparently
was...
he had a cramp.
Like a cramp, right. So assuming that is all it is, he'll be fine. That's another guy who's thrown the ball pretty well. So they're even scarier now. And it's not like the offense has stopped evolving, right? Because like Trey Phelps has been scalding hot the last few weeks.
Yeah.
And that's a guy who, again, like wasn't getting a whole lot of run early in the season, and he's just elbowed his way into it. Yeah. So yeah, this team's playing really, really well. I mean, they're a lot of fun, and they to me seem like a team that I'll be interested to hear you guys debate this on the Nerdcast, because they to me feel like a host.
I'm all
feel
in. Similar. So
yeah, it's a very different
what
team.
KR and Aaron say, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very different type of team than last year's Kentucky, and they arrived at a similar record differently, but it feels a little like last year's Kentucky in that like the RPI is going to be so high that, you know, 16 wins will probably do it, because you just, the committee is not going to be able to look past a top 7-8 RPI to have them host. So they're in a good spot. Also in a good spot, Mississippi State. They won two of three against Alabama.
That's where you were going.
trying to keep the ships moving.
There you go. Nice work.
Mississippi State, 2 of 3 at home against Bama, a big series win there. They continue to improve their standing with regards to hosting. They still have some work to do, but it is now, it seems very, very doable. They're sitting at 18 in RPI as we record, 14 and 10. You know, maybe they need 3 wins or so the next few weeks. That certainly seems more doable than it did. I mean, you go back to when they lost that series to Ole Miss, and it was kind of like, well, okay, maybe this team isn't actually all that much better than it was last year, right? And then they just prove us wrong right out of the gate. They're super hot right now. There were extenuating circumstances here. Obviously, we don't have a ton of detail on it, but Alabama had a bunch of players sick, so their lineups look a little wonky. But still, you know, State has to go and win the games. They win 2 of 3. And credit to Bama. They salvage a game on Sunday, because if Bama gets swept there,
They're in trouble.
Suddenly the math gets real tough on them. So kudos to them for doing that. But really another great weekend for State, where they just took care of business in a way that in previous years they so rarely had stress-free, drama-free series wins the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But now they're just doing that, and it's almost like we've started to overlook it just because we've come to expect it at this point.
Yeah. I mean, Mississippi State, and Hunter Hines was absolutely great this week. I mean, he had an incredible series of games. I do think that Mississippi State is at a point now where a host is theirs to lose. And, you know, I've said this before, no one loves hosting more than Mississippi State. And that's kind of where we are. I mean, they've got to go to Arkansas. They can't get swept there. And then Missouri comes in. If they sweep, even better. But probably if they take 2 out of 3, I think Mississippi State is in position to host. I mean, at 14 and 10 right now, should they get to 18 wins, check it out. It's done. If 17, then you got to look around and see what the rest of the country looks like. But I do think that Mississippi State is in a great position to host. The question for them is, can they continue this momentum where you're playing well going into these last few weeks? Because now they're one of those teams nobody wants to play, because they're playing at a high level. They're pitching well. They're swinging at guys throughout the lineup that are producing. It's a club that is, you know, they're going to be a problem. And honestly, at this point, I would probably put them number 5 in the conference. I mean, I really think they're the 5th team right now. They passed some of these other clubs like South Carolina and Georgia. I think Mississippi State is that next club. And if you're looking for, you know, Omaha teams and teams that are going to host and, you know, win supers and, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, Mississippi State is a trendy pick right now because of the way they're playing. Then you look at Alabama. As you mentioned, they went through some adversity, having to try to fight through it and understand, you know, who's gonna be available. Can they pitch enough? Do they have enough players to even field the roster, much less, you know, have a great batting lineup? And they were able to keep it keep it afloat. And the first two games weren't pretty, but they were able to get the third one and salvage it. And, you know, going into it, that's kind of what we thought they would do. They were going to go to Starkville, and they probably were going to win the series, and they'd probably take one out of three. And it took a kind of circuitous route to get there, but that's where it ended up. So that's where they are. And Alabama's got LSU next weekend, a monster series for both teams. I mean, Alabama kind of cemented their place in the regional picture with a series win. And in LSU, still, you know, they're still alive. So they can play their win. If the series from Alabama, then that really sets them up well, you know, as they go into the final week of the season in Hoover. And then Alabama finishes at Auburn, and I don't have to tell anyone in this geographic area what that rivalry means. Auburn will be ready to play the series is in Auburn. So Alabama doesn't need to go into that series needing to collect a whole bunch of wins, because Auburn's going to fight you. So I do think that, you know, getting that one today was huge for Alabama as they head into these next two weekends as they try to make the tournament. All right, make a regional.
Yeah. Other hosting hopeful, South Carolina, 1-2 of 3 against Mizzou, but had to work pretty hard for it. They lost the Saturday game, and then I think Mizzou got out to something like a 4-1 lead today before South Carolina righted the ship and ends up winning it in the end, looking relatively comfortably, but that wasn't how it played out, certainly. It would have been too extreme to say a series loss there would have sank South Carolina's hosting hopes, but it would have kind of undone what they had done the weekend before against Kentucky in a lot of ways. So a series win they just frankly kind of had to have. And now we're looking at a situation where not unlike the bubble that we talked about earlier, you're looking at seven teams that right now have very realistic, understandable, easy to see paths to hosting. And it's just a matter of, will they beat up on each other enough to where seven doesn't happen? Or will they all be able to bring all of those into dock and end up being seven hosts? We know that last year there were eight, so we know it's not the numbers game is not necessarily working against the league, but you do have to earn it individually, and so that's a factor there. But South Carolina did what they needed to do to stay on course.
Yeah, I mean, last week I had South Carolina number 5 in my power poll, and I think that Mississippi State's passed them, and maybe Georgia has too. Right. And South Carolina, even though they won a road series, maybe they treaded water at best, but because of what the other teams did, they were able to move up. So that's going to be interesting, because the good news for South Carolina is you have Georgia at home next week. So you could certainly make your case, you know, you win that series over Georgia and you leap them, right? And you're there, and that's one of the contenders that you're jockeying with. And there's some others outside the conference that it's trying to host against. So I do think that being able to win that today, because when they fell down early, I'm thinking, oh boy, you know, this is not going to be good for the Gamecocks, but they were able to rally and win comfortably. And I do think that's, you know, that's what they had to do this weekend. They didn't have to sweep. They needed to win 2 out of 3 and just kind of keep things where they were. Next week matters. Okay. And then when they go to Knoxville in the final weekend, they can't get swept, right? You got to at least take one there. And I know it's the number one team in the country and it's hard to win there. And it's not fair because you're being judged against the number one team and other teams could play, you know, teams that are 200 in the RPI. But that's what you sign up for when you're in this league. And if you want to host as a 6th place team or 7th place team, that's the kind of things you're going to have to accomplish. And that's where South Carolina is right now.
On the Missouri side of it, the current state of play with the race to Hoover is they are now, and Auburn just took a lead on Ole Miss. So let's say, and it's a 1-run lead, so anything can happen, but you know, even if Ole Miss is 9-15, that still puts Missouri 2 games back of the pace to be the last team in Hoover. And they've lost the tiebreaker with LSU. They did not play Ole Miss this year. So, I don't know exactly what that tiebreaker would be. But long story short is that, you know, they're really going to have to hustle at this point. Now, the good news for Missouri is that they have Auburn at home this coming weekend. That's obviously a winnable series there, just given that it's at home where they've been tough and Auburn is having the season that Auburn is having. So while at least right now, if you look at the standings, it might look like, oh, well, you know, Hoover's kind of already decided. It's only a matter of seeding now. Like Mizzou and Auburn are going to miss out. I mean, that would be the betting favorite for who's going to miss out. Sure. But a series win, and certainly a sweep for Mizzou, which of course we can't assume, but a series win this weekend for Mizzou, depending on what else happens with some of those other teams, like they could be right back in it here pretty quickly. So don't just assume because they are a couple games back that this thing is over. I would give, I think Mizzou with next weekend series against Auburn has a chance to at least make it interesting down the stretch. But on paper, it does look like it is clarifying a little.
Yeah, I would say, you know, they're chasing Ole Miss. Or if Ole Miss were able to beat LSU in Baton Rouge the final weekend, maybe they're chasing LSU. And so that would be, you know, that's how that looks right now. And the good thing is you do play the last place team and you have them at home. The bad thing is you're playing at Mississippi State in the final weekend and they're trying to win games to host. And the way they're playing right now, I don't, you know, that doesn't feel like a real palatable end of the season if you're Mizzou. But that's like we said for South Carolina, this is what you sign up for in this conference. You're not have easy wins. LSU was able to beat the number one team in the nation. There's no reason that Missouri can't go and do what they need to do down the stretch to sneak into Hoover. And that's the thing about Mizzou. I mean, and I've said this before, it just seems like we always pick them, you know, last or next to last, and they seldom finish there. And they're certainly have an opportunity to continue that this year. And if they knock off Auburn next weekend, and then they're able to steal a game or two in Mississippi, you know, in Starkville against Mississippi State, who knows? They can play their way in and be that 12th team, and maybe they play Mississippi State four times in a row, and you know. The fourth time might be the time that matters the most, and you're able to have some success, and who knows? Who knows what that leads? But that would be a great, you know, first season for Carrick and that staff to be able to qualify for Hoover, you know, in your first season when so little, I mean, honestly, so little was expected.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we were, you know, early in the season, we were kind of talking about, like, you know, this could mm-hmm. be really tough for Missouri this year, and I think they got off to a 1-8 start in the league, and you know, and since then it's been a lot better. Since 1-8, they're 6-9, which of course is not anything to put a banner up about, but considering mm-hmm. where they started, you'll take that. And this season has always been about setting the table for what's next. But to your point, I think we both have heard enough from Carrick to know that he's not really into the whole moral victories thing. And that, so getting to Hoover would be at least something tangible you could point to and say, like, look, yeah, nobody really expected us to get here. And we got here and we, you know, had to fight, you know, whatever it is. So that would certainly be something they could.
I would certainly spin it if I were him. You know, hey, nobody thought we could do this, and here we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. All right, Mark. Well, that seems like a show. Touched on a lot there. A lot of moving pieces this week. Felt like we had some teams make some big moves forward. So that sets the table for a really good finish the last couple of weeks. And I think we knew that was coming. So we're glad to see that is what we actually likely to have play out. We will be here in a week to talk about it all again. Okay. We will, the postseason picture will get both more clear and murkier, I am sure, this time next week, but that's what makes what Mark and I do. Right. That's what makes what Mark and I do a whole lot of fun. Programming note. I mentioned this on my weekend waypoints video this morning, Sunday morning. If you're not watching those videos, please do so. I would appreciate you doing that and supporting the sponsors who have been a part of those programs. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. Mark and I are going to do a special edition of Weekend Waypoints, I guess you could call it. Monday night, time TBD. We will communicate it, rest assured. We just need to kind of bat it around and talk about it a little bit. But Monday the 20th, which is the night before the SEC tournament gets underway, Mark and I are going to do a live stream version of basically the podcast, but it'll be under the Weekend Waypoints banner. Yes, we're going to preview the tournament. What is that?
Weekday waypoints.
Yes, weekday waypoints. Yes, thank you. That's a good one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe I can get Pat James to make a new little backdrop for
make it. Make a new graphic, yeah.
Yeah, just scratch out like graffiti, scratch out the, you know, end and put day over top of it. So, you know, time TBD, but Mark and I are going to preview the tournament, but also come in there with some comments for us. We'll do some Q&A along the way. We're happy to do that. Would love to do that. So if you've been someone who's commented on my videos on the weekends, please join us for that. If you're someone who hasn't done that because it, you know, the schedule doesn't work for you, do it on that preview show. We'd love to have you, and not only following along but being a part of the show. That would be a lot of fun. So Monday, May 20th, sometime in the evening, exact time TBD, but we'll make sure we pass that along once we have it scheduled. So that is going to do it for this edition of Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra at d1baseball.com. Thank you to Pitch Logic for sponsoring this and every episode of Highway to Hoover. Thank you to Mark, as always, for joining me. And thank you, the listeners, for listening. We'll talk to y'all soon.
The Highway to Hoover podcast is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on, and if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.